Okay, in this final hour, we'll take your phone calls, more of the calls with Frank DeMarco as we talk about the cosmic internet. And also, if you want to share some of your stories with us, we'll take those too on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are. Frank, where do you go next with this message?
George, can I just throw one thing in?
Yeah.
I want to talk to that caller who was calling from Florida, and he was concerned that
the one who was writing the poetry for his grandfather.
Yes, he was concerned that he couldn't get to his was a grandfather.
Yeah.
In time before he died, but I think that his life has led him there for a reason. He can be closer to his caller just by to his grandfather by communicating mind to mind than he could by being there in sensory presence because his grandfather has dementia. Do you see? He can actually get closer being where he is if he'll get into a receptive state and have an imaginary conversation with his grandfather. That's what it'll feel like. But it could be that he'll begin to get answers or get responses that surprise him, and that'll be a sign that the imaginary wasn't all that imaginary.
Well, how do we know that we might know that the sender is doing this, but how do we know that the receiver, the person on the other end, is picking it up?
You won't know. Until you get the sense that it's an actual conversation, that you're getting responses that you didn't program in yourself, that'll give you some confidence. But I don't know that you'll ever really know. Even after doing this for 20 years, you know, people ask me, are you really talking with Hemingway? And I say, well, maybe I'm talking with Hemingway. Maybe I'm talking with my idea of Hemingway. Maybe I'm talking with what I think Hemingway would say. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Ultimately, it comes down to, does the material resonate? If it doesn't resonate, it doesn't resonate, but you can't prove it one way or another. At least I can't.
No, not at all.
But I think he would find, I should throw in one more thing. Your feelings are going to be very important here. If he were to try to talk to his grandfather that way, and he would either find it unsatisfying or very satisfying, and if he found it very satisfying, I would take that to be a clue that something within him had actually had the communication and knew. In other words, that it was real.
That's got to be heartwarming when you know that's working.
Well, yeah, sure. You know. People lead hard lives because they think they're isolated, you know. That's one of the things that started me on this book, among other things. I mean, people think, and I thought when I was very young, you spend your life and you're not only are you isolated in life, but you do whatever it is you do. You know, you accumulate talents, you learn stuff, you make friends, whatever you do. And when you're gone, it's dead. I mean, when you're dead, it's gone. And that's very depressing. That makes life very meaningless. And I think our society, and you see much more of it, I'm sure, than I do, I think our society is dying from a sense of meaninglessness. And it's also unnecessary.
Well, maybe so. Maybe so.
Now, I interrupted you when you started.
Yeah, so where do you take this work next? What do you do next?
Well, I'm doing it right now on this show, I think. Because what I want to do, I've been sort of a hermit for the past dozen years or so.
Really?
Yeah, I've been stuck out in Nelson County, right near the Monroe Institute, in fact, right on the grounds, or on grounds right adjacent to it. And it's been very quiet, very peaceful. But now I was moved to move back into the city. And among other things, it gives me access to high-speed internet, which may sound like a joke, but it isn't really. I think I'm going to have to get more into speaking, like on the air or doing more workshops, because I feel like what I've learned has reached a boiling point where I can put it into, I shouldn't say a few words, I can't do anything in a few words, but I can put it into words and explain to people this is not some gift for special people. Although a lot of people try to, if they get the gift, they feel that way, you know. It's not special. It's human. It's part of our inheritance. And we can, everybody, I that's a broad statement. I think everybody potentially can learn to do this. It's like if you play the piano, everybody can learn to play chopsticks. You can't all learn to be Mozart, but you can learn to play at least chopsticks.
So true.
And that's you're a spirit, you're a non-physical person who extends into the physical. By the nature of that, all the psychic abilities you've ever heard about are at least potentially inherent there.
Have you ever run into a psychic vampire, Frank?
Yes, but I don't think they knew what they were doing.
No, lots of them don't.
Actually, I do. Now, come to think of it, I do know one man, and he's somewhat famous, and he had what he was calling an artistic cooperative out in California, And a friend and I went to visit him, and I immediately realized he was sucking the energy out of everyone around him. And although it was supposed to be a cooperative, everything there was him. Everything.
And you're saying he didn't know it?
No, he actually did.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. But a lot of people don't know it, because if you don't know that these fields even exist, you just the strength of will alone might be enough to you know, sort of suck away other people's vital energy if the other people are open to it or are vulnerable to it. The answer to that is more consciousness than anything else, I think.
Good point. All right, back to the phones. Joshua in Woodlands, Texas, first-time caller. Hi, Josh.
How are you doing tonight, George?
We're doing great. Thank you.
It's an honor finally to be speaking to you. Frank, I had two comments I wanted to speak to you about.
Uh-huh.
The first thing was I was wondering if you were familiar with the works of Jiddu Krishnamurti.
I, of course, know the name, but no, I'm not.
And I also wanted to comment on what you said earlier about whenever you were in connection with the entities or the guys upstairs, whenever you dream, you don't really dream that much. And from my experience with that is throughout your day, as you make sense of it, your dreams are just a continuation of your day. And so whenever you're dreaming, you're trying to figure out what's going on throughout the day. But if you're making sense and you live a good spiritual life every moment of the day, then you don't dream because it's already taken care of during the awakening of the day.
That's very interesting. I have been told that what I'm doing is equivalent to what Carl Jung called active imagination. And he said that if you're doing active imagination, you'll dream less. So that sounds more or less the same as what you're saying. Staying connected is a way of requiring less information in a dream state, perhaps. But I really don't know.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You are very, very welcome. Next up, we go to Robert in Greenwood, Indiana, on Coast to Coast. Hey, Robert, welcome to the show. Robert?
Hi, Frank. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm not sure. I was waiting so long. I totally lost my question, but I would love to totally interact with you, Frank. It sounds like you're totally in tune with your spiritual self.
Well, thanks. Of course, there's always room for improvement. I'm not perfect. George is, but I'm not.
No, I'm far from that.
He's just experienced. And thank you, George, for the time. I appreciate it.
That's okay.
Well, Frank, the only question I had is, it's not really a question, it's more of a statement. You have such a, I'm short for words now. Maybe it's because I feel like the spotlight and cameras are on me. But
they are.
probably because it's too early in the morning.
Yes, sir. Well, this is Hartzell Perry's grandson, and it's odd to react on some of the letters I've read lately, and the things you guys talk about is bizarre because these are things that their personal letters went back and forth, spoke about. And most people don't speak this stuff out in the air like it is on Coast to Coast. I mean, everything spoke of, but the connection between the spiritual and physical world is totally open right now. Back in the day, in the 70s and the 60s, we used to drop acid, they said. I'm only 42, and to open that up. But today, you can open it up with anything. I mean, the internet, with whatever, just some transition, a little experience with. Are you relating with me at all, Frank, what I'm talking
about? Very much. In fact, the guys upstairs have told me, everybody who does it makes it easier for everybody else. They made the analogy of cows crossing a river. If you want the cows to cross the river, you have to really kind of work to get the first few across because they don't want to leave the herd. But when you get more than half across, the rest are hurrying to join up because they want to stay with the herd. They've said everybody who does this work, which means being receptive on their own, it doesn't mean being on the air, doesn't mean writing books, but it means being aware and increasing your consciousness. Everybody who does that has an impact.
And my cousin always talks about it. He's like, just, you know, go consciousness. Open up with your consciousness, yourself, and you're connected with that. And I'm listening to you, and I wish I could recall and more of what I had so early in the morning now. So I waited a few hours to get online. But I appreciate what you're doing, and Godspeed. And, George, appreciate you.
Okay.
And thank you very much, Frank, for your time.
Well, thanks for calling.
Well, let me ask you this, Frank. Who out there now in terms of, you know, with Robert Monroe gone, is there anybody out there that has been practicing this, that, you know, they're way out there, they can teach people?
Well, there are scads of them, sure. I mean, I'm not you've left me a little short on words, which isn't the easiest thing in the world to do.
That's a first.
Yeah, it is, actually. have you noticed I'm the strong silent type, George? What are you asking, actually? What is it you're looking
for? I mean, who are the leaders in this field now?
Well, you would know that better than I. Well, you deal with them all the time.
Yes and no. I mean, there's some people out there that haven't really gone public yet. You know, they're more behind the scenes people. But, I mean, the old days, the J.B. Rines, remember those people?
Well, yes, but, of course, that doesn't mean that J.B. Rine was known to the mainstream for a long time.
That's what I'm saying. There are a lot of people out there that may have the capabilities of helping other people, but nobody knows who they are.
Well, but, you know, that's sort of beyond my pay grade. Well, my mission really is to the beginners, I think, because I'm not all that advanced. What I am is somebody, in fact, I remember Bob Monroe saying this to one of our, I did a program up there, and that was when he was still alive, obviously, and he was talking to us. And he said, some people want to make me into a guru, but I look at myself as somebody who moved, and he put his fingers about an inch apart. He said, moved from there to there. And I feel the same way. What I know is how we can begin. And I know that everybody can do it. Now, not everybody's going to want to do it, but everybody who wants to do it can do it. And that's really all I know. There are people, I mean, there's University of Virginia has DOPS, you know, which continues that's the Division of Personality Studies, I think, or maybe it's Perceptual Studies. They continued Ian Stevenson's work on reincarnation. The Rine Institute still is there. There's Esalen. There's a million places. But the thing is, you never have to go far to find what you need. It's always right at your fingertips. As Henry Thoreau said, you don't have to go and count the cats in Zanzibar. Your life will bring you what you need. It'll be right there. Now, that's hard for people to believe at first, but if they have a little bit of experience trying it, they'll find that it's so.
Good point. Let's go to Arcata, California. Hello, Al. It's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Yes. Hello, Frank. Hello, George.
Hey,
How are you this morning?
Good.
Yeah, I find it interesting how you refer to them as the men upstairs or the guys upstairs. In my experiences, in near-death experiences and also of other people who have had near-death experiences, many have said that they have encountered what is referred to as the profound question. Have you ever had that experience?
No, I have not. Would you say more about it?
Well, it's a... those that have gone through, that have had a true near-death experience,
right,
said that they would get asked a question that seems to have no ego, no good, no evil. It is like the awesomeness of questions that has an answer that you cannot really answer, nor can you really, it leaves you in awe-ness, that you have no choice but to surrender to the. To what it said.
This is beyond my experience. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, it's helped me to eventually get into remote viewing and other aspects of psychical research.
Have you then done, like, something with the IRVA or with Monroe Institute or somebody?
Indirectly. I was involved with the Stargate program.
Oh, okay.
And with the indirectly, my father-in-law was associated with Robin Monroe.
Your father-in-law, I'm thinking I might know who he is, but maybe not. Was he in the military?
He interacted with the White House.
Okay, well, I don't know then.
No, that's a different...
If you were in remote viewing, did you know Skip Atwater and Joe McMonigle?
I've met not too many of the military people.
Some of the best.
Yeah, I met Lynn.
Lynn Buchanan?
Yeah, and Mel... And all those. But I was mostly primarily in the civilian end.
Okay. Sounds like a fascinating thing to do.
All right. Thank you, Will. Indeed. Remote viewing. Have you tried it, Frank?
Yes, I did. The Institute the Monroe Institute has a six-day course in remote viewing. And it turns out not to be too difficult to do.
I find that to be much easier than OBEs, personally.
Well, it's easier than near-death experiences.
Yeah. Let's not worry about that for a long time, huh?
Well, I don't care.
Well, now that is an interesting statement. Why not?
But, you know, I'm not in control of my life, and I don't want to be.
Yeah, but you surely want to live this the longest you can, don't you?
No, actually, I don't. One of my fears, and of course, any fear is a limitation, but I would just as soon not live to a ripe old age where I lose
your faculties.
And,
yeah.
Now, it's not a question of losing my marbles. That happened years ago, you know, but there are a lot of inconveniences in growing old. And I guess what's happened is, George, there are supposed to be two fears that everybody has. And one is fear of death, and the other is fear of public speaking. And I don't seem to have either one of them.
No. Well, and with me, I'm no fear of public speaking, but fear of death, not anymore. I used to, but not anymore. It's gone.
Well, to say, you know, I don't want to die for a long time would be to say I know better about my life than the part of myself that's outside of time and space, yeah. Which I don't believe.
See, I'm on the last third now. I mean, I'm on the home stretch.
Hey, talk to me about it. I'll be 65 next month.
Yeah, you'll get there before I do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. Pave the way.
No, you're on your own.
Just don't call us collect. Let's go to Strawberry, Arizona. Dirk, welcome to the show. Hey, Dirk, go ahead.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Blessings to you both.
You too.
What a conversation.
Thank you.
Well, I've had that experience without having to die. So
Good.
So I know Frank, you know what you're talking about.
Thank you.
You mentioned spending all this time with Robert Monroe. I was wondering if you ever got to meet the Reverend William C. Brown.
William C. Brown.
Yeah, he helped Robert Monroe develop and verify the...
I knew the name was familiar. No, that was long before my time. I didn't meet Bob until 89.
Okay, yeah.
And I didn't really have much interaction with him until 92.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, he died in 95.
Right. William Brown was an etheric surgeon in Toccoa, Georgia, until the Russians turned on their over-the-horizon radar and drove him out of there and over to Sedona, where I met him. And I worked with him there, but he told me the story about helping Robert Monroe develop the technique.
He must have been quite the person.
Well, interestingly enough, he's managed to stay quiet. He passed away back in 98. And there's only one web page on him on the whole internet. But he was a fantastic individual. So taught me a lot.
All right. Thank you. You know, sometimes a lot of those people who did things years ago, the internet hasn't picked up everything. You would think it has, Frank, but it hasn't. It's missed a lot.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's private in people's lives that they don't particularly want out there.
You know what I found on the internet today? One of these old plays I was in high school.
Oh, no.
With my little name in there. Played the part of Fagin.
And what were you doing searching for George Norrie, may I ask?
Somebody had told me that there was an old play that they could look at.
And I
found it, yeah. I was looking for Oliver, which was the play, and then up that popped. I'll be back in a moment. We'll take your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, split program for you, so make sure you're part of it, and we'll be back in just a moment with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Frank DeMarco. Frank, are you going to continue writing in this arena?
Yeah, sure am. In fact, I'm working on, believe it or not, a long thing that I'm probably going to call A Hemingway Nobody Knows, or A Hemingway Nobody Knows, because I have probably 2-inch thick, single-spaced transcripts of my conversations with Papa over the past year. It's in fact, if anybody goes to my website and signs on my email list, I have a sample there of 14 conversations with Hemingway that they'll get. It's not a big thing, but you know, just something for them. The thing is, people are going to say, you know, how do you know it's Hemingway? And it's the same old story. You don't know. See if the material resonates. And it is changing my life, actually.
You don't know. What is Hemingway been saying these days?
Well, there are several different things. He's part of the guys upstairs, and I don't mean my specific guys upstairs, right? But he and others have a sort of a plan for us, or that they're trying to push us. And where they're trying to push us is where we will all walk around conscious of our connection upstairs. And because that's one of the things that I can do, is to push people in that direction, they're working with me on that. But there's a lot there about his life, about his books, about things that were misunderstood, about things that where the myth has actually obliterated in a way, or anyway obscured, the actual man. And you might think, well, how often is it that somebody has unfinished business on the other side? But actually, it happens quite a bit. I don't know if you ever read Stephen Schwartz's book, The Secret Vault of Time.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah. And there was a man who was a monk in Glastonbury, and several centuries later, he helped the architect, James Bly Bond, to reconstruct, actually not to reconstruct it, but to find all the various places that had been. And of course, as soon as Bond admitted what he had done, he was fired. Which is, you know, ridiculous. I mean, the times have changed, but this was a century ago. But what I'm saying to you is that Hemingway's agenda is part of the guys upstairs agenda in general to help us all to realize we're connected, because then everything changes. You know, so much fear and so much hatred goes away when people realize, A, they're not going to die and that'll be the end of it. B, they're not going to see the end of their actions either. What they have made themselves is what they'll be, and it's harder to change when you're on the other side. The physical world was designed in order to make it easy to change, to choose. But once you've done all of that and you're outside the body, you don't have a single fixed reference point and a single fixed moment in time as we do, whether we like it or not, and it's much harder to change then. They say, do your work now.
Well, that's a good point. Let's take final calls here. Back we go. Youngstown, Ohio. It's Lenny's turn, east of the Rockies. Hello, Lenny.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Okay.
Doing well.
Hey, Frank, I just got a quick question for you here, and there's like two real quick parts to it. Have you ever in your life, this has happened to me two times and I'm 25, have you ever in your life had a dream to where it was so realistic you thought you were actually living?
Oh, yes.
And then the second part is, I don't know, maybe you could call this maybe like advanced deja vu possibly. But this has happened once to me, to where you would have a dream, like it was the following day, and you would have an actual conversation. And then when you would wake up that same day, you would actually say what you dreamt.
Yes.
I mean, to a T.
That happened to me when I was 17 years old, and it was not a significant thing. I mean, it was just I was working as a clerk in a drugstore, and I had a little exchange with the druggist. It was just a few words, but I remembered immediately that I had had that in the dream before. Never knew why.
Good point. All right, next up, let's go to Kathy in Orlando, Florida. Hi, Kath.
Hi, George. Thanks so much for taking my call, and Frank, good evening to you.
Thank you.
Great show. I've been on hold for a while, so let me just say I'm going to stumble a little bit over my words because I got to watch the shuttle Endeavour come back home tonight and feel the sonic boom. So it always energizes you and makes you just a little bit crazy. But what my concern was when you were talking earlier about the good versus evil, and we shouldn't be judgmental because, you know, you don't really know what has prompted someone's evil to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a little bit like you didn't seem to touch on any of the biological reasons, which in a lot of cases is truly, you know, I feel like if I judge somebody who wants to, say, God forbid, eat human flesh, and they feel like that's the way to do it. That's the way they want their life to go. And they don't feel it's wrong. But that's a biological, possibly a biological or physiological reason, not just because they, you know, and I feel I'm okay judging them because that's not how I feel. But I felt when you were speaking that it was maybe I shouldn't be so judgmental because, you know, what brought them to that point is not what brought me to my point where I am.
Well, and in fact, the guys have said to me, and I guess I didn't make this clear before, I don't think I said it, they've said that you can't judge other people because you don't have the data. And one reason for that is, and this is an elaborate thing I would have to go into, I went into it in two books already, but we are not the individuals that we think we are. They said that, let's say Frank DeMarco is what they would call the ringmaster for a whole bunch of strands, some of which we think of as past lives. some of which are traits, all right? And you don't know what kind of strands another person is holding together, and you don't know how well or badly they're doing because you can't know. So if someone has murderous impulses, and they also have maybe charitable impulses, and maybe they have parts of each of themselves that hate each other, just holding it together, no matter how badly the rest of their life goes, may be an achievement. There's no way to know. When I grew up, I was a Catholic. I went to Catholic school, and I was Catholic until I was in my teens. And I still do value that education, because one of the things they used to say was, "Hate, love the sinner, hate the sin." And as I think about that, I think, yeah, that's exactly right. We have a stance on evil. Nobody's in favor of evil. But it's too easy to say they did evil, therefore they are evil. We just don't know.
Wow, that's a really tough place to go. I mean, when you have a feeling that you're convinced that, I mean, that is evil, there is no other way to understand it or to even not appreciate it, certainly.
You know, the difficulty is that our English language uses the same word judgment to mean two different things. And it is right and it is necessary to discern as best we can. But condemnation is a different thing. And unfortunately, we use the word judgment for both of them.
Remember when Gordon Gekko in the old movie Wall Street said greed is good?
I'm one of six people who never saw that movie, George.
You're kidding me.
It was a very sheltered life.
All right, but it was a great line. He said greed is good.
Yeah, well, he may think so. Look at the results.
Yeah. Let's go to the Bronx. Gerard, it's your turn.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
How's it going? Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest about electronic communication between us and the deceased. Recently I was watching a TV program, just to give you an example, and in the background I see a woman that looks strikingly like my mother. What tools do we use to interpret what message this may be conveying to us?
I'm not positive which way you're saying it. At first I thought you were going to say, do I think that electronic communication with the non-physical will become possible? And I think, yes, it will. But that doesn't sound like where your sentence ended, where your question ended.
Well, I wanted to know, now, when something like this happens, is it coincidental or is it supposed to be interpreted in a specific way? And how do we decide in our minds what the message is?
Well,
there's that word again, too, Frank.
Yeah, well, there is. I don't believe there's a coincidence, but it doesn't mean that everything has cosmic meaning either. You know, I mean, some things can just be uninterpretable. However, you do have feelings that will be your guide, and that's what I would say you should always go with. Our society, unfortunately, sort of overemphasized the intellect, and the intellect is an important thing. But your feelings are the language of your soul. Your feelings will tell you when you're getting hot and when you're getting cold, you know. Mm-hmm. You may or may not come up with an intellectual understanding of it, but you can ask, be receptive, and wait to see what surfaces. I don't know anything more that you can do or need to do than that. You may not get an answer either, you know, but sometimes you will.
Thank you, Frank.
Okay, does that help at all?
Yes, I believe it has, and I will be waiting.
When you get that answer, how do you know it came from, well, and again, we don't, your guys or from within? We just don't know, do we, Frank? Frank, are you there? Well, we've lost Frank. Frank is gone. Let's go to our first-time caller.
Hey, is it George on with me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask Frank if he's back on yet. I actually, when my grandmother had Alzheimer's, and it's like it was an extended time that she went through, and I wouldn't go see her because I knew the minute I went to go see her, she would go ahead and pass. And she did. And another thing I've noticed is, sometimes when I'm around somebody and it's the last time I ever see them, it's like they have this aura around them. Is that something that is common, or
what color's the aura, Greg?
It's like just a glow. It's just a glow that they seem to exude, and I'm not somebody who studies this stuff. I've just caught myself as I get older. I'm in my early 50s, and I've noticed it about people that I really care about. The last time I see them, I can almost, it almost scares me, and I try to deny it, say, oh, no, it, and sure enough, it kind of.
All right, well, happened. Let's find out. Frank, have you ever gotten a, you know, in direct contact with anybody who sees auras?
I know some people who say they see auras, and I don't have any reason to disbelieve it. I think if I were the caller, I would ask, why has this ability been given to me, or this predicament, whichever way you want to look at it, and see if that gives you some clarity on it. Since not everybody does that, but some do, and you're doing it now sort of without wanting to, I think the productive thing would be to say, okay, why? How is this designed to help me? I look at everything in my life anymore, whether it's a problem or anything else. Okay, how are you trying to help me? Sort of an optimistic way to look at things.
The next thing you're going to probably get involved with, Frank, will be hands-on healing or energy healing.
Oh, I've been doing that for years.
See, I knew it. How did I know that?
You must be psychic.
It's all part of it. It's all part of the package.
It is. It is. And the biggest blockage to healing is the idea that we're separate from each other, which we really aren't.
No, we're not.
I have a friend who calls himself ESP Thick, and he's almost proud of the fact that he's persuaded that he has no extrasensory abilities. But when his infant child was deathly sick with a fever, he knew somehow to put his hand on the child's forehead and took the fever away, and then went back immediately to saying, I'm ESP Thick.
Let's go to Cape Girardeau in Missouri. Hey, Jay, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Good
morning.
Morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Frank, I want to ask you if you ever read anything by Eckhart Tolle.
No, I haven't, and I know that a lot of people haven't gotten a lot of good things from him, but I have
he's
not.
He's on the Oprah's book club list. He's written a book called The Power of Now, and he's written one called Awakening to Your Life's Purpose, mm-hmm. A New Earth. And a lot of things that you're talking about is that you're just missing it just a little bit. It has a lot to do with Zen Buddhism, and pretty much that when you're listening to me right now, your mind is talking, but then you can't be hearing me.
That's right. You have to learn, exactly. It's what they call single-pointed concentration, I think.
Right. You have to learn how to turn that voice off, because basically it's the ego, E-G-O, ego, that is telling you exactly what you want to hear, and it may not be the right thing that you want to hear. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I look at it from a little different point of view, and I would say just be receptive and let the voice come through rather than the ego. Nothing wrong with the ego. We need it to be here, but it has a limited perspective. And if we just are a little more receptive and allow the rest of ourselves to chime in, we get a whole different perspective, which is much more useful. Especially it's useful in tandem, you know. You don't throw away what the ego knows, but you merge it or you compare it with what the upstairs, as I call it, knows. And you get a much better, you get, you know, two eyes give you perspective. One eye just gives you a one-eyed vision.
Eckhart Tolle, by the way, sold anywhere between 3 and 5 million copies of a couple of his books.
Sounds like somebody might be listening. What do you think?
After being on Oprah's show.
We'll see how the George Norrie show does.
Well, that'll do well, but then Oprah did really well for authors, didn't she?
She did well for authors, but she also did well for her audience because she really transformed lives, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm saying this as a person who doesn't have a television, so I've never actually seen the Oprah show, but I know that she has had transformative effects on other people.
She went off the air, unfortunately, a little too early for you because she would have liked this book.
Well, maybe not. Maybe she would have.
No, I think she would have. You get down on yourself too much. I think she would have.
Oh, no, I wasn't down on myself at all. I'm just thinking it's a big pond, and I'm just a little frog, you know?
Let's go to Monterey, California. David, squeeze you in real fast. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My name is Dave. I stumbled over something that you said, Mr. DeMarco, about the fact that the Earth is not a school. I thought I had been finally taught by some wise souls that we were here, that we made a commitment, sort of analogous to an executive being made, given a transfer, that we had, while in a discarnate state, made a commitment to come to this planet as a school to do two or three specific things before we pass on. And the things had to be those which would evolve our soul state or bring us closer, but then also make a contribution to the greater good. And I don't know if you could comment on those things.
I've heard that often, and it may be true. I'm just saying that the guys have said, I don't know that they've ever specifically said it isn't a school at all, because you can't make decisions without learning things. At least you should, anyway.
I think it's a prison planet, Frank, myself.
No. I've heard all that, and you know, in a way, all of that is a diversion from our real task, which I believe is to get more attuned inside, and then you'll know what your task is. That doesn't mean there's nobody should be investigating those things. But to stick with the caller's point, I think my perspective on it from the guy's point of view is we're here to form our souls, which will function on the other side as minds that continually interact, and we never actually got to talk about that.
I agree with that, Frank, indeed. The name of the book, of course, is called This Cosmic Internet. Frank, thanks so much for being on the show. You're a trooper. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.